Whether your company is looking to host an exciting holiday party, a multi-day meeting, or some high-action team building, Apex Entertainment in Marlboro is the perfect destination. Apex features flexible meeting space, customizable catering menus, and attractions for all ages. Check out the luxury VIP bowling room, which includes 8 lanes of bowling, a private bar, and pool table. Apex is 100,000 square feet of fun with go-karts, bowling, laser tag, and more. Go to apexentertainment.com or call their sales team today.
B-Pod Studios.
Preseason work starting in July. You know, usually that happens somewhere, you know, towards the end of October, in the middle of November, somewhere in there. He understands what he needs to do. Does a great job with his regimen, takes care of his body, his preparation. He's learned how to manage his time and what he needs to allocate it towards. And I think that's really an important thing for a young player. It just can't all be on the same thing. Can't all be on studying film and all that. It just got to be a balance between your preparation, taking care of your body, getting your rest, continuing to train and do the things that keep you strong and healthy and keep your mind healthy as well. So it's always a process. I think he's done a really good job of it. We continue to try to talk about that to all our guys. I'm not concerned about that. He's ready to go. He wants to try to finish the season strong.
Josh McDaniels this morning on Mac Jones about the rookie wall, whether he's hit it or not. Svelger Maz, Tuesday after Christmas, 617-779-0985. It's a big boy Tuesday. Greg Bedard is alongside until 4 o'clock. Phil Perry's here for the duration. Poor Perry gets saddled with me for the whole show. But what are you going to do? Mac Jones, whether or not he's hit the rookie wall, I don't know if that's necessary. You know, necessarily what it is. I'll just tell you how I feel about it. I don't think he's been good enough recently. I don't think he was good enough against the Colts. He certainly wasn't good enough on Sunday. You could argue that the Patriots didn't trust him in Buffalo in the wind. So Mac Jones hasn't been helping the Patriots win games really for the last 3-4 games here. You know, I mean, Greg was, you know, criticizing his performance against Tennessee. I would tend to agree with that. So I don't think Mac Jones has been good enough lately for the Patriots. But Greg, you wrote in our email chain that he actually felt like Mac Jones was pretty good, in your words, in the second half.
Yeah, I thought that, look, the Patriots offensively, I didn't think, you know, going back and watching the coach's film, I didn't think they were as bad as I thought they were when I was in the press box and even watching the TV copy. When I watched the coach's film, I thought they were a little bit better. Look, they started off terrible. The first drive was terrible. There's no question about that. But then they come back and they answer Buffalo's score. And I think that in the fourth quarter, they mount, you know, third quarter, fourth quarter, they answer two drives to get within a score twice. They're doing their job. And to me, I think they would have been better. Could the defense get any stops? Could the defense get them, get the ball back for them? I will say, I thought Mac Jones's worst drive was before halftime. You know, they got the ball back with 1:45 left. They're down 17-7. That's the really, I mean, that was the Trent Jones
Trent Brown
drive. Mm-hmm. Trent Brown,
yep,
drive. I mean, because that was just an idiotic penalty that he took. And I don't want to hear any complaining about it. You watch it on the TV copy. You watch it on the coach's film. The umpire and the referee were talking to the Patriots after the roughing call. And they were telling the Patriots basically to cool it, all right? The flag was picked up after the Jerry Hughes thing, which I don't agree with. The flag should not have been picked up. I understand that.
I agree.
But still, it's 2nd and 3. And the Patriots are hot. The referees understand that they're hot. The umpire tells them to go back into the huddle. And the umpire and the referee both talk to David Andrews. Trent Brown is listening to the whole conversation, and basically he's telling them to cool it. And what does Trent Brown do? He comes out, starts mouthing off to the Bills right in front of the umpire, who throws the flag. David Andrews knows what just happened. He gets mad at Trent Brown. I mean, it was just dumb and totally short-circuited that drive. Who knows what would have happened? But on first down, the Patriots had a great play, totally caught the Bills in the covers that they wanted. Jacoby Myers was wide open for a big play, and Mac Jones missed him, checked it down to Brandon Bolden. Missed him. It was incomplete pass to Brandon Bolden. Threw high to Hunter Henry on the next play when he was open. I didn't like his decision on third down when he got roughed. So the drive kept going. And then on 3rd and 18, he misses Brandon Bolden as well. I thought that was his worst drive of the game. If he's better there, if Trent Brown is better there and they score going into halftime, it could have been a different game. But I thought the offense just needed more opportunities and the defense just couldn't do it. I mean, they come out after halftime, they give up a 14-play drive. Nice adjustments at halftime. The defense was just abysmal.
It's just really hard to go blow for blow with an offense like that when you're constructed the way you are.
Sure.
Right?
They're not meant to do it.
So on the positive offensive drives that the Patriots had, what did they do? Yes, they got a few nice throws from Mac Jones in the second half. He had one great throw to Jacoby Myers sort of up the left seam when Damian Harris had a good blitz pickup there. Like, he had a couple of nice throws, but when they were really cooking, they were running the football. And that's all well and good, but it takes time. And you run out of time eventually when you're going up against an offense that can be as high octane as the one that the Bills have. So that's why it gets back to the conversation we had off the top of the show, which is their margin for error is slim. And to be constructed the way that they are, they can't have those boneheaded, whether it's the penalty on Trent Brown that wiped at least 3 points off the board. Right, because they would have been on the Buffalo, I believe it was, they were going to be on the Buffalo 38-yard line with plenty of time left. They easily would have gotten into field goal range, in my opinion, if not for that whole sequence. The Christian Barmore penalty might have been a seven-point penalty. The Bills end up scoring a touchdown. They go from 4th and 7 to scoring a touchdown on that drive because Christian Barmore, who is lined up on the football, I understand Greg mentioned it, and it was a smart play by Mitch Morse, who's a veteran center and a smart guy. He adjusts how he goes through his pre-snap routine, essentially, to screw up Barmore to get him to jump. But that might be seven points going the other way if he's just disciplined enough to watch the ball there and not jump offside. So, you know, and now we're talking about the J.C. Jackson interception maybe later in the game, and then it's an entirely different game. You take those two penalties out of the equation. But they are built the way they're built, McCarthy, and it's not to let Mac cook. And when you go against really good teams that have quarterbacks that can erase the mistakes, erase the warts that you have elsewhere on a given game, it just makes life really difficult. Everybody has to be on their P's and Q's, and they haven't been the last 2 weeks.
Yeah, I'll just say this before we get to the people, because I've neglected the people. That's on me. They can't win passing the ball. They've shown you that they can't win, like, we're going to put the ball in Mac Jones's hands. We're going to throw the ball 40 times. They haven't put that on tape. So I'm going to say that right here, right now.
Not against a great team.
No. I can they do it against anybody? Have they done it against anybody?
He had a really good game in Cleveland. Against Cleveland.
Okay.
I mean, he threw it all over the lot.
And
Tennessee,
they did a pretty good job.
He didn't have a great game against Tennessee. I agree with you guys there. But he did throw for, I think he threw for 3 touchdowns or 300 yards in that game. He set some sort of season high for himself. And they could not run the ball that day. And they beat a tough, I don't know if they were good, they weren't talented, but they beat a tough team that day throwing the football. So they've shown they can throw it a little bit. I wouldn't say they can't beat a team by throwing the football. It's just they haven't done it against a very good team yet. He can't go blow for blow with a great quarterback.
I have little faith that they can do that, particularly in a playoff-type scenario. Maybe I'm wrong. I hope I'm wrong. I've been wrong a million times before because, you know what, I'm going to have to be wrong if they're going to go deep into the playoffs. They're going to have to throw the ball eventually effectively, and I don't think they could do that on Sunday. Ryan's in Malden. What's going on, Ryan?
What's up, Ryan?
Hey, what's going on, guys? Hey. So, I like to talk about Mac Jones and the weather, cold weather that he's been going to have to be playing in. We obviously know he's from Bama, where it's hot every day. And I think it's going to be a factor. I think it's going to take some time to get him acclimated to this cold weather. I mean, if you look at the Sunday game against the Bills, I think it was 15 to 20 mile per hour winds. And he said that was a factor for him. I mean, if that's going to be a factor for your quarterback, then there's a problem there. And I wonder how you guys feel about that.
You know, I was there. It felt like a good day to throw the football. It didn't feel all that windy. Granted, I was sitting in some cushy seats, so I don't know if I was exactly exposed to the elements. I parked with the unwashed. I sat in the traffic, but I was taking advantage of an opportunity. What can I say? Did you guys think that, have you bought into the narrative at all that Mac Jones and the cold and the elements, you know, that might be an issue for him?
I think it could be, Greg. I don't know about you, but until he shows that it's not, I think it's fair to ask. He was asked the question after the game. He said he's still learning, I think is how he put it, to deal with the elements. So, you know, we saw him play in bad conditions in Buffalo. He didn't throw in bad conditions in Buffalo. This is really the first time he's had to play and throw in sub 50 degree temperatures. And it didn't go well. It was probably his worst game. You know, overall, for me, it was his worst game, but it was probably his worst game accuracy-wise as well. So how do you explain that? Is he hurt? Is it the wind? Is he just exhausted mentally and physically from going through the ringer? And, you know, you're 20 games into the season now, if you include preseason, he's never played this many games. Greg, I don't know how you answer that. I don't know if any of us can authoritatively. I think we're all grasping at straws to try to figure out what happened to him the other day. But I think the weather question is a fair one, because we know, even though his hand size is fine, and I love talking about hand size on the Zolak and Bertrand program, but his arm is what it is. It's not a strong arm. It's not above average arm by any means. And I think that could be a factor.
I think that I was worried going into Sunday because the weather reports, and I thought it was accurate, you know, walking in the stadium and feeling it, you know, sustained winds around 11 miles an hour, gusting at times. I don't think it was very good for Mac, and I was worried about that going in the game. It was, you know, something that one of my factors sort of going into this and why I barely picked the Patriots in this game. I thought it was an issue. The wind was going against the offense, going towards the lighthouse in that game. I thought it also affected some of the decisions on fourth down and whether to kick field goals and things like that in that game. I thought it was a real factor. But overall, I mean, what Phil said, I agree with. I can't tell you one way or the other whether it is a factor or not. All I can tell you is that the questions about it are legitimate until Mac answers it. And right now, he has not answered it. And I thought that, look, this game was a little bit skewed by the score and how things went, but I often go by, look, the coaches know the players better than any of us do from, you know, just watching games. They see him in practice every day. They see Mac Jones playing on the field. All I can tell you that it felt like the Patriots were not very eager to have Mac Jones airing it out going towards the lighthouse in that game in the first and fourth quarter. He had 11 attempts in those quarters. He had 21 attempts in the second and fourth quarters with the wind. So to me, that's a little bit of an indicator. I'm not telling you it's the definitive in any way, but I do think it's a factor. I think it's on the coaches' minds, and until he answers it, it's going to be a question.
Well, the one time he did throw deep there, McCarthy, to the lighthouse end, he probably should have been picked.
Yes, he should have been.
He overthrew N'Keal Harry slightly. I don't think he saw the rotation that the Bills were using in their secondary on that particular play. Should have been intercepted. And Greg's right. When they were pushing it down the field a little bit more, they were going the other direction. This is why.
And he missed Myers on that play, by the way. I just want to point out, because I just remembered, Myers was open on that play and he missed him,
right,
and went late there. That was not a good decision on that play.
This is why those scouts and coaches love arm strength, right? Is because it's not always going to be perfect in the pocket. In fact, very rarely is it going to be perfect in the pocket. When you have a quarterback with a strong arm who can move a little bit the way Josh Allen can, you can put it anywhere you want on the field, no matter what your offensive line looks like, no matter what the pressure situation is. When you're Mac Jones, you're more limited. Things have to be ideal. Again, margin for error, very slim. He has to have the right kind of pocket for them to be able to execute properly in the passing game.
McCarthy, Perry, the big boy. We got 10 questions coming your way next.
This Sports Hub on-demand content is brought to you by Frazier Engineering. Frazier Engineering is your MVP for all your commercial mechanical needs. Just give them a call and make your next project a win. Go to FrazierEngineering.com to find out more. Frazier Engineering, great people doing great work.
This is the place Boston sports fans come to get some positive vibes for their teams.
Anything but. It's time to panic.
Well, maybe not. Now, back to reality with Felger and Maz.
You want the answer? You've got to ask the question.
Do you have an opinion based on if you had to go with your gut, which way it would go?
Sometimes you have to ask it over and over and over again.
Why?
This is 10 Questions with Greg Bedard and Felger and Maz on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
All right, McCarthy and Perry in for Felger and Maz today. So big boys here. 10 questions with Greg Bedard, presented by Granite City Electric. Electrical contractors, get on board the GCE night train. Order your materials to be delivered overnight to the job site the following morning and save time and money. Go to GCENightTrain.com. We've got 10 questions. We've got 10 minutes to do it. So, Skaz, hit me with our buzzer options today.
That wasn't nice.
I'm trying to make a point, so shut up.
And my username is username 985 Felger.
Love that. Oh my God, what a horror. Hang it more, Barnes.
A little baseball there from McTakey.
Wouldn't it be cool if Dallas added a second team?
No.
Yes.
No.
Have the new team killed.
What an awful idea.
Nothing better than Murray's Jerry Jones.
Oh, it's tremendous.
Don't you feel stupid?
Every day. Every single day. So we have just Bad News Bears, absolute clown show, a bleep show from the Boston Red Sox. The game is tied. They went to the ALCS. I was spot on, I think. All right, 10 questions.
As usual.
Question number 10. Yeah. Uh-huh.
What do we got?
I think. Yep. Oh, my God. What a horror. Hang it more, Barnes. Who would be the best matchup for the Patriots in the first round of the playoffs?
By default, it's the Bengals. I mean, I don't like going against them because I think Burrow and those guys are starting to figure things out offensively, but I don't like their defense, and I think the Patriots can score enough points in that game.
I don't love that matchup because I think they're so talented on the outside. It would be hard for the Patriots to match up. So I'm actually going to go Dolphins here. If they could somehow figure out a way to see the Dolphins early, I think that's probably your best bet. I know they're hot. They have played nobody during their winning streak. You can criticize the Patriots and who they've seen during their winning streak, the quarterbacks they've seen. The Dolphins has been a joke.
Number 9.
I don't like that answer, Phil. I don't think that's not a realistic matchup for them. I mean, even if they get Patriots are going to be what? Even if they're the 5th seed, they're not going to see the Dolphins in the playoffs. Like it's got to be one of the top 4 teams.
That would involve the Patriots winning the division.
Patriots get as high as
number 2, right? If they win the division.
No, the Bills are winning the division.
The Bills are going to win the division. But they could be 3. They could be 3.
No, they can't. It's the 4 division winners.
So there's too much math involved in this. All right, so Greg, you're right.
Wow, that is great.
I'm not going to do the math. I'm just going to look at the teams that are in the hunt that are right there, and I'm going to pick a team that I think is pretty good matchup for the Patriots. That's all.
All right, guys, you know, let's reset number 9 here.
Don't you feel stupid?
That was what Greg just said to Phil. Who would be the worst matchup for the Patriots in the first round of the playoffs?
It's the Bills. It's the Bills, Greg. It's they've got this Patriots offense figured out somehow. It's those safeties. It's Sean McDermott. Even with Brady, they gave the Patriots a hard time. And the same concern that I have that would be there if the Patriots played the Bengals, the talent that the Bengals have on the outside, exists with Buffalo. Only Buffalo's quarterback is better. So it's the Bills.
I want no part of the Titans, a healthy Titans team, you know, with the running back and the 2 wide receivers. That defense can do some things against Mac Jones and that and the Patriots offense. I don't think the Patriots can stop the Titans running if Tannehill has his play action game, if he has that running threat. I don't and Vrabel against Belichick. I don't want to see the Titans.
Number 8.
That wasn't nice.
The Arizona Cardinals are blank.
Soft. Every season they fade. They just, Kyler Murray gets hurt. He's too small. He can't last the season. Too many old guys. Chandler Jones, has faded too. Doesn't look like he wants to be there. They're just soft.
I went with frauds. The fact that Cliff Kingsbury was in the Coach of the Year conversation a couple of weeks ago,
oof,
to me, is a joke. They're fraudulent.
Number 7.
And my username is username 985 Felger.
Where will Jimmy Garoppolo be next year?
Nolens. Down there with Sean Payton. Couple of Eastern Illinois guys just having a grand old time down in the bayou, New Orleans.
I think he's back in San Francisco. I don't think Trey Lance is ready. I think Jimmy's going to rebound and have a strong finish to the season, and I think he's back.
Even banged up, Greg?
I haven't paid close attention to that. I don't know if he's out for the year or
but he's got a thumb issue. Okay. It sounds like he's dealing with something real.
Yeah, he's always banged up. Number 6.
Yep.
Just Bad News Bears, absolute clown show, a bleep show from the Boston Red Sox. The game is tied. Speaking of bleep shows, the Seattle Seahawks. Where will Russell Wilson be next year?
New Orleans for me. I got him there instead of Jimmy Garoppolo. I couldn't really find a good destination for him. I think Russ and Ciara want to go to, you know, some big market. Like, I can't see them in Cleveland or anything. But so I'm going New Orleans.
Is there a way that the Broncos could figure this out and bring him aboard? Because I think if the Broncos ended up with Russell Wilson, That's a scary team. I know it's not a massive market for him, but I'd rather end up in Denver on a pretty good team than, you know, the Jets, just to say I'm in New York.
I like Rodgers going to Denver.
It feels like Denver's going to land somebody. I know it's not the biggest market, but that's a team with a lot of history. Manning went there 10 years ago. Somebody's going to end up in Denver. I'm with you guys. Number five.
I'm trying to make a point, so shut up.
Greg Bedard again a few minutes ago to Phil Perry there. Will Josh McDaniels get a head coaching job this offseason?
No, I thought he was with the Jaguars, but if the Jaguars are sticking with Trent Baalke, no chance.
I'm going no as well. I think there will be teams that are interested. I'm just not sure he's going to be interested in those teams,
no.
i.e. the Jaguars. What a bad decision by Shad Khan to keep the GM, thereby limiting your head coaching options. Like, how many people are going to be willing to go and work with a GM they haven't worked before that maybe they don't know? That's just another botched decision by the Khans. I think they're smart people, but I think they've handled their team horribly over the last decade.
Oh, that leads us nicely into number four.
Wouldn't it be cool if Dallas added a second team?
No.
Yes.
No.
Have the new team killed.
I love that one. This gets us into the Jacksonville Jaguars portion of the program today. I promise it'll be quick. The next head coach of the Jaguars will be?
Wait, did you just throw that in?
No, that's...
Nope,
that's
I missed it.
You want me to step up? I'll step up. I'll take this one, Greg. I'll take it first. I'll go Brian Daboll. Brian Daboll brings a lot of the same things that Josh McDaniels brings to the table in terms of the quarterback development stuff. It's just he's done it at a high level with fewer guys, right? So he's got the Josh Allen model, the Josh Allen example. Longtime assistant, clearly a smart guy. You've got a toolsy quarterback down there in Jacksonville. I think it'd be a good opportunity for Daboll.
Byron Leftwich for me, coming home, the former Jaguars quarterback. I think it allows the Khans to do it cheaply, keep a lot of people in place, and it'll end up being a terrible decision, but I think it's going to be Leftwich.
Number three.
Oh, my God, what a horror. Hang it more, Barnes.
I think that was the game in Toronto where they melted down.
Of course you would remember that. No one else does.
No one else remembers it. I do, because I care just a little too much. The biggest tool bag Jaguar of all time is blank, and this is the non-Urban Meyer division, because that's just too easy.
Can I go after a guy in his post-playing days? Because I'm going to go Mark Brunell here. The tears.
You can do it, yes.
The tears, talking about Tom Brady during Deflategate. I mean... That's the definition of tool bag.
That's good.
Just taken a little bit too far. So give me Brunell.
I went with Derek Harvey, the defensive end, who was selected eighth overall. The Jaguars gave up four picks to Baltimore to move up 18 spots. Then he ends up holding out almost all of training camp and ends up with eight sacks in 3 years. Great career.
Number two.
That wasn't nice.
Your favorite Jaguar of all time?
Freddie Taylor. I grew up loving the University of Florida. He was my guy there, and I loved him on the Jaguars.
Let's go Tony Boselli, just because I like big, strong dudes that, yeah, I mean, he was a specimen. He was an absolute specimen in his heyday.
And finally,
somebody needs to do a drop of that.
Big, strong dudes.
Phil likes big, strong dudes.
Yeah, big, strong dudes that are specimens.
Cut it, Skaz. Cut it. Number one.
Don't you feel stupid?
Every day. Every single day. Trevor Lawrence is blank.
Trevor Lawrence is headed for a horrible career unless he engineers a trade out of Jacksonville. This is just... They already blew one head coach. He's going to be in his second system. You know, with the new head coach, it's just not going well. He needs to find a way out. Get out, Trevor. Get out.
That's too strong for me. I think they could maybe salvage this thing. Maybe that's an appropriate answer next offseason. But I think they've got a shot if they get somebody who knows how to coach down there next year. So I'm just going to say he is TBD. I have really railed against those that are calling him the next big thing at that position. I understand the tools are great. It's okay to play kind of well as a rookie, McCarthy. He has not played well at all this year. You get the occasional glimpses, but it's been a mess of a year down there. It's okay, despite a bad coaching staff, despite a bad situation, it's okay to occasionally play well. He really has not done that.
I'm with Bedard. He's doomed. He's absolutely doomed because that is a terrible organization. I mean, to your point, maybe the Khans are smart. I don't know, but they don't know how to run their football team. They got no clue down there. So that guy, doomed. Absolutely doomed. We did well. 10 questions in 10 minutes. Let's get your thoughts on the defense. We haven't touched enough on that today. And let's make sure to take care of the people. We got one open phone line right now. Grab him. A lot of phones with Bedard until he gets out of here till 4 o'clock. It's McCarthy, Phil Perry. Quick update on the headlines, then right back with you.
This Sports Hub on-demand content is brought to you by Miller Lite. Miller Lite, official partner of the Boston Celtics, would like to say cheer to 75 years of Boston Celtics basketball, to 17 banners, to the players, coaches, and staff from yesterday and today. And, of course, cheers to Celtics fans everywhere. So raise the original light beer to this storied franchise and cheers to another 75 years of Boston Celtics basketball. From your friends at Miller Lite, it's game time, it's Miller time.
Felger and Maz.
Those guys are always trouble. I want nothing to do with this guy.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Well, I think they took really advantage of the lack of quickness and speed of the linebackers of the Patriots. I mean, they're big physical guys, and they threw the ball. They checked the ball down to Singletary. You know, Singletary had 5 catches. He averaged 7.8, and they were very good on first down. They were outstanding on first down. They were always getting positive yards on first down, and they made this Patriot defense play slow. But I think more than anything, I think this Patriot team thinks that they can play at a certain level. And in the last 2 weeks, if you don't raise the level of play, if you don't raise the detail in your game, because the last 2 weeks have been playoff game for the Patriots, and they failed miserably at that contest. I mean, they turned the ball over in Indianapolis. They didn't stop them ever on I mean, this score really wasn't as close as this score was way closer than the game.
That's Mike Lombardi on his podcast. It's Felger and Maz, Matt McCarthy, Phil Perry in for the guys. Big Boy Tuesday, Greg Bedard's alongside. Greg, you pointed that comment out to us earlier today, and I think Lombardi's spot on. Lack of speed on defense for the Patriots, which I also equate to in some ways, and this is not entirely connected, but I would say lack of speed and maybe just lack of talent in general. Would you agree with that?
I would. I mean, it depends on the opponent and how the opponent plays. I mean, like, you play into the Patriots' strength. The Patriots want to fight you in a telephone booth. They want it to be basically tackle to tackle, inside, taking on blockers, you know, setting the edge and stuff like that. The more you spread them out and thin them out, the easier it is to pick sort of the weaker players on that team and take advantage of some of their weak spots. But I also thought that Mike was completely accurate there and reflected, you know, one of Phil's comments earlier on in the show where, you know, and look, Mike Lombardi talks to a lot of people inside the building and his son's on the staff. And for him to be talking about lack of attention to detail, how they've come out and played, like the last couple of weeks, basically he was saying the Patriots were really feeling good about themselves and thought they could slap it out there against anybody and win the game, and they basically got punched in the mouth. I mean, that's basically sort of the question Phil was asking earlier. So I think both points are accurate and they're spot on.
Identity crisis. They thought they could play up to a certain level. Now it's very clear that if they don't ratchet things up, play with a little bit of intensity early, it's not asking all that much to not be totally dead for the entirety of a first quarter against the Colts, the entirety of a first quarter against the Bills. It's not asking all that much. But I think they were riding high after that game in Buffalo. They had the bye. They were, quote-unquote, feeling sorry for themselves for some reason, McCarthy. Mm-hmm. I think because the bye wasn't as long as they wanted it to be.
What?
And they thought, exactly. I mean, the fact that that came out was, I mean, I think you add all these things mm-hmm. up together, whether it's that comment from Mac Jones, whether it's just how they've played and how they started these games against the Colts and the Bills. The commentary from Matthew Slater yesterday talking about how they can't let things splinter, whether it's splinter in the locker room, splinter between Patriots players and other players, players and coaches, talking about how we have to either put our feet in the ground and fight or this thing is going to spiral out of control. I mean, that's Matthew Slater.
Yeah, it's not
that
good.
Is the oracle. That is the voice of this team, the best gauge that this team has or that the media has and that the general public has of where this team is psychologically. It tells me they're in a little bit of crisis mode right now because they can't sit back and say it's all going to be okay. Because it used to be, it's all going to be okay because we've got 12 and we've got Bill and we've got Gronk and we've got Jules. It'll all be okay. We've been there before. They've got a lot of guys that have been there before, but it's not the same group. And you can't just sit there and say it's all going to be okay. I think that's why Slater said what he said. I think it's indicative of the fact that they're in a little bit of an identity crisis mode right now.
Yeah, it doesn't feel like a good moment for the Patriots right now. It's hard to really feel any other way. Ernie's in Revere. You're up next. McCarthy, Perry, Bedard. Hey, Ernie.
How you doing?
Hey.
You know, we talk about Mac Jones like he can't bring the team back. Well, first of all, you got to make the other team punt a couple of times in order to bring the team back. Even against Indianapolis, they had him 3rd and 8, and they whipped, and the guy ran for a touchdown. They stop him there, they get the ball back, and he's only about 2-something to go in the game. Mac has a chance, even though he played bad in the first half, even though he had a rough start in both games, he still was bringing them within the score.
Sorry, Ernie, to cut you off. The defense has been a problem. Undeniably so. I mean, that it has been an issue. It was an issue against Indianapolis. It was certainly an issue on Sunday against the Bills. Chuck's in D.C. He's got a question for Greg on Matt Judon. Hey, Chuck.
Hey, guys. Happy holidays. Hey. Greg, I read your column this morning, last night in BSJ, watching some of the film. And if you go back and watch on the match, on the Stephon Diggs catch for 3rd down on the conversion, the little flick, I think Phil mentioned it earlier. Matthew Judon got absolutely annihilated by Deion Dawkins, mm-hmm. and that was a one-on-one matchup. So, I mean, he had such a great start to the season, but, you know, now that he's kind of coming back down, and it doesn't seem like it's because of more attention being devoted to him. It seems like he's losing a lot of one-on-ones. What do you think's going on there, and how do they mitigate this going forward?
Yeah, I mean, I don't disagree with what Chuck said. I mean, I don't think he's getting an abundance of attention or anything. To me, just the difference. And look, you know, Matthew Judon, when I talked to people from Baltimore when he signed with the Patriots, they all said he's going to be really good there. You know, I do think there's a bit, and he won the good guy award for dealing with the media. He's been tremendous all year. He's been tremendous in the locker room. There has been in his career a bit of a sort of an up and down with his personality, type of thing. And look, it might just be simply that he's hurt, that he's banged up. And, you know, when you're not feeling well physically and you know you can't do the things that you want to do, you know, you're not exactly, a great, you know, sort of rah-rah guy and lifting other people up like he was early in the season. To me, it has to be an injury issue. You know, that I've never seen a guy sort of fade like this without an injury. I thought they were playing him too many snaps earlier in the season in some of those games where it's just like, look, this is a long-ass season. And, you know, he's the only pass rusher. You can't ask him to do this for, you know, 17 games, 18 weeks plus playoffs. And maybe that's part of it, but there's no question that he was not good enough in this game. He had opportunities to make plays. Sometimes he took himself out of plays. Sometimes he wasn't even close to making a play or didn't look interested in making a play. I don't know what to make of it. But if this Patriots defense is going to get any stops, and related to what Ernie was talking about, I think the theme of this year is the defense's inability to get the crucial stop when needed in the games that they've lost. Matthew Judon's a key to that, and if it doesn't rebound, you know, we're looking at a very quick playoff exit if they get there.
Matthew Judon, McCarthy, was part of the reason that this defense was able to play the way that it did during its winning streak. I think a lot of us credited Judon and Barmore for their ability mm-hmm. to play more zone in the back end, sure. rush for, get pressure. He looks hurt because he has been a shell of himself the last couple of weeks. The caller mentioned the one play where he gets put on his back on the flip to Diggs. On the run that led to the eventual turnover on down, so they ran it right down to the goal line. The back sort of slipped right at the goal line. He didn't get in. If you go and look at that play, he gets swallowed up again by Deion Dawkins. He got blocked one-on-one by Dawson Knox on a long developing pass play. He is just not himself right now. That's trouble for the Patriots.
I have a very important question for you two, and you need to answer this properly. I am a great person, correct?
Correct.
Greg?
I plead the fifth.
There are a ton of you waiting patiently to speak to Greg. You have been waiting very patiently all afternoon. We have one segment to go with Greg. We're going to go lightning round with Greg on the phones.
Yeah.
next.
If you own a home and are not using the sun to offset your energy bills or provide a backup power source during a blackout, it's time to do what I did and contact Devlin Solar. Devlin Solar is bringing affordable green energy to New England by using the latest solar technology to provide efficient energy solutions. To see if your home qualifies for solar, call 800-818-5641 or visit devlinsolar.com. They put a system in my home and it's great. So do what I did. Reduce or eliminate your energy bills and power your home through a blackout with Devlin Solar, the most trusted solar company in New England. Financing is available through Sunnova. Don't wait. Call 800-818-5641 today.
Felger and Mass.
They've been incredibly consistent.
The only thing that's consistent is their inconsistency.
I don't think that's inconsistent.
Yeah, which is exactly what Murray said.
Am I misinterpreting it?
No.
Now, more Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Greg Bedard here with us for 7 minutes, 7 minutes more, and I won't take you a minute beyond your allotted time, Greg. I'm not that person. It's Matt McCarthy, Phil Perry, Greg Bedard, Big Boy Tuesday, which, as always, brought to you by the Granite Group. They're an award-winning distributor of Mitsubishi's electric heating and air conditioning systems, locations across Massachusetts and New England. Learn more at customizedcomfort.com. The people want to talk to you. I will let you talk to the people, Greg. We'll go lightning round on this. We'll start, how about with Bob in Pembroke. Hey, Bob.
Yes, I was calling about the continued success of McKenzie going up against Miles Bryan. My question relates to this. Who, in fact, is the defensive coordinator? Who is making the decisions when something is going awry? Is it the father? Is it one of the boys? Is it Gerard Mayo? Who's in charge of that defense and making adjustments?
Thanks, Bob. Greg?
As far as I know, Bill has heavy input in the game plan. He is down there making adjustments during the game. He basically sets the course for adjustments in the game. Sometimes he meters them out. Steve gets a paint-by-numbers play sheet based on situation against that certain opponent and calls the game. Mayo is more in charge of substitutions. But I think you could view Bill as the de facto defensive coordinator. I don't know what Phil says.
I agree with all that. If somebody is in the game, it's because Bill Belichick wants him in the game. So if you're looking for a substitution there, Bill Belichick is probably the guy you're looking at. Steve Belichick makes the calls. So if you're thinking, okay, the play caller is the coordinator, he's the closest thing that you'd get as far as that goes.
Jim's in Winthrop. Hey, Jim.
Hey, how's it going?
Hey.
I have a question. Actually, I have a take on the Patriots, and I was wondering how you guys think. You know, arguably, Belichick's probably the best coach in the league. But it seems like when he goes up against teams with, like, a superior talent but an inferior coach, that coach will always seem to drop a stool, and he'll do something stupid and, you know, will end up winning the game. But conversely, when he goes up against a coach that has a clue and has talent, you know, it doesn't seem like he does so well. And it just seems like, how long can we really stay competitive when we have second, third and fourth tier talent, you know, and with a superior coach? Eventually, I don't think you can do what Brady did.
Thanks, Jim. Is there talent second tier, third tier, fourth tier? I mean, maybe partially on the I guess you could make that argument. How would you feel about that?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, look, the Patriots are in the midst of a rebuild, and it's just the first year, and you know, at least, you know, I've been saying it since the beginning. Like, when you make a lot of changes in the offseason, bring in a lot of new guys, it rarely works right away. You're hoping that you catch fire at some point in the first season, towards the end of the season, like the Bucs did last year. But really, you're going to be probably better in year two. The Patriots need to get younger and more talented in certain spots. You know, certainly the front seven, you're hoping a guy like Cam McGrone, Joshua Bledsoe, you know, draft picks that were red shirts. You know, Josh Uche, can he get on the field? God, can somebody please play Josh Uche so I could see somebody who can run in the front seven after somebody once in a while? Man, he would have been nice to have running after Josh Allen on Sunday. I don't know. Call me crazy. But the Patriots, right now, they're probably second tier in terms of talent, but Bill and the coaches make it work better than a lot of people. They have the coaching advantage over a lot of teams. I don't see that getting better. I mean, Sean McDermott knows he has had to step up his game. I thought he was very mature after this game and during this game. I think he realized and watched himself after the first matchup and knew that he was an idiot and handled that really wrong and made amends. He said Bill's made him a better coach. I think that's absolutely correct. I think that Flores is a good coach. I don't think Salah right now is a good coach. But the Patriots are always going to have a coaching advantage, and that's going to give you an advantage in about 85% of the games. But you also need talent to go with that. I think the Patriots are in the middle of changing that, but they got to follow through in the next year or two.
Tony's in Stoneham. Hey, Tony.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
What's up?
Here's the whole situation, okay? They lose the Buffalo game, first game of the year. I mean, Miami game, I guess it was, with a fumble. That's normal. They lose the Dallas game because they miss a field goal. That's normal. The key to this season was losing to the Colts. You don't have block punts in football that often. Without that block punt, they win that game because it winds up, they're leading 17-13 with 2 minutes to go. The Colts get the ball back. They're not going to hand off to Taylor. And speaking of Taylor, yes, he looks phenomenal, and he should get all the awards this year. The fact is, in that game, he ran 28 times for 103 yards before he broke the last touchdown. And he doesn't run that touchdown, because when they get the ball back and the Patriots are leading without the block punt, they're throwing the ball. They're not handing it off to him.
And, Tony, we're up against it. You can't have three block punts in a season. You just can't. Is it, real quick, Greg, 30 seconds, is that talent or is that coaching?
What, the Colts game?
I mean, allowing three block punts in a season.
Oh, I think that's just poor execution. It was poor execution. They didn't pick up the right guys on those blocks. And I think, look, Tony's correct in that. That was a huge play in that game. I mean, it completely changed the look of the game, the look and feel of the game. But you can't, that was very early in the game. The Patriots had plenty of time and did crawl back into the game. You know, we've been over the late game decisions, the decision to kick the field goal, which I didn't agree with. It almost worked out for them, but didn't. There's a whole bunch of different things. But to me, the Indy loss wasn't that big of a deal. It was coupling it with the Buffalo game and falling behind again, where all of a sudden you're like, oh crap, now where are they going to be in the playoffs? They beat Buffalo at home against a team that they usually handle when they're healthy and on all cylinders. Then everything's in front of them. But, you know, they got off to another poor start, and now they're fighting uphill.
The Indy game just adds more evidence, Matt, to the pile of what we've been talking about today, which is they're not talented enough to play sloppy football and beat good teams. The margin for error is so slim that when you make two mistakes, they gave up 10 points on special teams in that game. Brandon King's offsides gave up another 3. So that's 10 right there to a good football team. You're not talented enough to be able to overcome those kinds of mistakes.
I think there's only one appropriate way to end a Big Boy Tuesday on Felger and Maz, and that would be a take on Josh Allen, which is what Blake in Boston has. You got to be quick, though, Blake.
I will. Josh Allen is criminally overrated. He had 3 passes that game that should have been intercepted, and every time he threw one, he overthrew Diggs. Diggs would look back at him like, dude, what the hell is wrong with you? It was hilarious.
Thanks, Blake.
I love Blake. Blake can call anytime. Beer's on me, Blake.
You know what? Cut Bedard's mic now. We're after 4 o'clock. I said I wouldn't keep him after 4 o'clock. Not going to tolerate that.
Track that call. That came from the Bedard family basement.
Yeah, where did that guy come from? Not from Boston. Greg, as always, great stuff. Subscribe. Read the Boston Sports Journal, all that. Follow him on Twitter at Greg A. Bedard. Appreciate you giving us the time today, Greg.
A lot of fun, boys. Have a blast. Let's do it again.
See you, Greg.
Sounds good. 90 seconds, no commercials. We've got a COVID update for the Patriots right here. We'll get to that real quick. And then, we've done a lot of Patriots. We just had Greg in. We will continue to do a lot of Patriots. But we do need to get to the Celtics disaster from last night. Matt McCarthy, Phil Perry, taking you until 6 o'clock in for Felger and Maz today. Quick update, right back with you.
The safety of your loved ones has never been more important. That's why Safety Insurance offers the Drive with Safety app, which gives you the ability to monitor driving habits that will help improve the performance of every driver in the family. Plus, save 5% on your auto policy. Ask an independent agent about Safety Insurance. We'll help you manage life's storms.